Simmons, Parashat Emor.
Good morning. Just going to share with you the a reflection on the understanding of the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, which we said last week, perhaps connected with the Mishnah we're going to say this week, of Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKainim, who says, Heben Mispalel B'Shlomo Shel Malchus, that we should pray, we should daven for the welfare of the government, Sh'imoleh Mora, for if it wasn't for fear of authority, Ishes Re'eu Chaim B'la'ai. I'll try and learn something about where this comes from, and also to see some of the examples in history where how this has developed from the sources right at the beginning. As Jews, we're very conscious of the idea of where we live. Is it just a Golos thing or not? That's another question. And we're very conscious of the way the authorities react towards us, but we look at that also in a positive way as well. Sometimes we're the result of, we have to suffer the results of incalculable evil, and sometimes we have to benefit, we do benefit from the idea of a civilized society. So, just reminds me, there's a story, a proverbial ancient story told of a king who was going to go fishing. And he checked with his local palace meteorologist what the weather was like, and he was told it was going to be a beautiful day, I suppose a bit like this morning. He was going to be told it was a beautiful day, so he sets out on his journey, and as he's going out on his journey into the fishing area, he meets a clown. And the clown understands what's going on. The clown says to the king, don't go today because it's going to rain very heavily afterwards. So the king said, what do you mean? He said, my palace meteorologist told me that the weather's going to be beautiful. So who are you, a clown, to tell me where to go and what to do? So as it happened, he went on, started his fishing, and then the heavens opened and he got soaked. So when he got back, the meteorologist in the palace had offered to answer for his sins. And the king traced the clown and he said, reward, you're obviously a very clever man. He said, what I want to do is I want to make you part of the government. And that's how clowns became part of the government and remain part of the government since. So the source of it is very interesting. Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKainim was not actually the first to say this. Okay, if we look carefully, look at the source sheet which I passed around, if you look, there's a pasuk in Yirmiyah. In Yirmiyah, chapter 29 of Yirmiyah, Koyamar Hashem Tzvokos, and the Israel, Chol HaGoyla Asher Glesi Mirushalayim. So Yirmiyah is very interesting there to look at the story. Yirmiyah sent a letter. He sent a letter in a scroll to the people who were in Bovel at the time. And he sent the letter to give them various instructions about the Golos. If you understand the context of that Golos, they were going to be in Golos for 70 years. And it seems that was a fixed thing. It wasn't going to be like we are constantly wishing that Mashiach will come and Golos will end. It seems at that time it couldn't end. It had to be the 70-year span, and then they would come back. So he sends them a letter and he gives them instructions in the name of Hashem for the idea of what they've got to do in Golos. So he says, L'chol ha'goyel ha'sheh glesi yeschem shama, and he says to them, Benu batim v'shevu v'nitu ganos, build houses, plant vineyards, v'ichlores pirio, kichu noshim, marry, take wives, and get children and grandchildren. You see there is a reference to the grandchildren. Very interestingly, the two generations, your sons and daughters over the page, so they may have sons and daughters. And then he says the following, seek the peace of the city where I have caused you to be taken away captive. And pray to Hashem, v'ispalalu ba'adol Hashem, and pray to Hashem for it. And then he gives a reason, ki bishloima yielochem shalom, because in its peace you shall have peace. You, the people, the Golos, you will have peace. So he was speaking about the idea that we should Dirushua Shalom Ha'er, which seems to be to do things positively to contribute to society, and then Vispavlu al Hashem and to daven to Hashem Bishloma for its welfare. And this seems to be the origin of what Rabbi Chanina says in the Mishnah. But there is, we'll see that there is a big difference between the two, because Rabbi Chanina is saying something negative. He's saying something positive, but he's giving a negative reason. He's saying she'omalei moira, that the reason why you should pray for the welfare of the country where you live in is because of fear, because of the concern. Ishas re'eu chayim b'lah. Yirmiyah is not saying that. Yirmiyah is saying it in a positive way. Yirmiyah is saying that the dirshu shalom ha'er, positively look forward, look and contribute to the society, and also daven to Hashem for it. So we're going to come back to that, but that's the source. That's the source for now. And the Baal Tanura refers to this, and he says, the Baal Tanura quotes a pasuk in Habakkuk, which says that says as follows: "Vatasa Adam Kidge Hayom Keremes Lo Moshe Boy," that men will be like the fish of the sea. What does it mean that men will be like the fish of the sea? What's the Baal Tanura saying? Because fish, big fish swallow little fish. Just like big fish swallow little fish, therefore, if you don't have proper order in society, then what happens is the big fish, and it's the same in business and all spheres of life, the big fish will swallow the little fish, and they will, the vulnerable little fish need to be protected. So the only one who can protect in society is to have a proper authority, a proper government. Therefore, says the Baal Tanura, that is what they connect with the Pasuk in Chavak, based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and therefore, for that reason, that's why we do it in that particular way, and that's how he explains. Now, if we have a look, I want to go into that a little bit further, and we'll see how that evolved into what the kind of thing that we know about today, where this works. Rabbi Chanina was a contemporary of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he was a person who, some say, was the same as the next Mishnah. I've not been able to resolve this absolutely. Rabbi Chanina ben Taradion, who was one of the Asara Aruga Malchus. I've seen some sources say he was one of the Asari Maharuga Magus, but I'm not sure why then it changes in the Mishnah from Rabbi Chanina Skanakonim to Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion in the next Mishnah. I've not really found a definite answer to that. They did live in similar times, and if he did, and he prayed for the welfare of the country, he believed in that, and then he was executed by the Romans, that calls and, you know, makes the whole thing into, puts into a slightly different context. So I can't say for sure. I'm not sure. If anybody can tell me for sure, then I'd be interested to know that. So he says as follows. Rabbi Chanina explained this idea that
wasn't he the cook by Rabbi Nokodosh?
Yeah.
There was that means Rabbi Akiva wasn't the last one to be killed.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't managed to find out enough of the history to determine whether it's strange if it is the same person that it changes its description, because the next Mishnah says Rabbi Chanina ben Tradion. Yeah. So, and in the first Mishnah it calls him Skanakon. There might be a reason for that, which we'll come back to. But I don't know for sure. That's what I'm saying. I'm just putting it forward as an idea. So, if we just go a little bit with this, go a little bit further into it as follows. So, the context. If we look in the other Mefarshim, we'll see that it's not all about Golos. Actually, it's not all about Golos. We see that, actually, according to several of the Mefarshim, including, I think it's Rashi as well, I'll just get the page and quote it for you, that it's not just about Golos, that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, in the time when we were living there, and we had our Beis HaMikdash, and we had everything was as it should be, then also we should daven for the authority, for the welfare of the king as well. So I'll show you, Rashi says, I think it's Rashi. Yes, Rashi says as follows. Rashi in Pirkei Avot says, V'dushu ha-shalom ha-shei glesi ha-shechem shama, v'afilu bu'omos. Rashi says, even amongst the nations, Kemoshe Motzinu she Yisrael, what's the Raya, where do we learn it from? She Yisrael ho yinodrim nadorim unadovos, v'nodrim aleim. We know that we could bring korbanos on behalf of non-Jews, and we find a specific example on Sukkos. Kemoshe Motzinu b'shivim parim shehu mevi'im b'chag al shivim ha'umos. So Rashi says that just like we did things on Sukkos, we brought korbanos for the other nations, so also this idea of davening, but the point here is that afilu b'omos, Rashi says, but I feel it almost. And similar thing is the same with Barabbeinu Bachayas says the same thing. The Ein Sorich Loima Hayoyim Begolusenu. It doesn't. We don't need to say in our Golos Shetzrich and Olul Hishpal Bislab Hispalu Shlomo Shomachus. Shaharei says the Barabbeinu Bachayas. Af Bisman Maalosenu Umalchusenu. Even in our time, Kishahoya Habeis Hamikdash Kayam Nitzavinu Min Hatorah LaHakruf Korbanos Alomos Olam VeHem Shivim Parim. So he says that we brought it then on behalf of others, and even according to Rashi, so at the time of the Beis Hamikdash we brought it on behalf of other nations, we davened and looked after their welfare, and it seems even for ourselves as well, according to what Rashi says, that afilu ba'omos. So we did it at the time for others, and we seem to have done it for ourselves as well because of what Rashi says, that afilu ba'omos. So it's a kind of the ein sorich loimas as Rabbeinu Bachaya. It's an interesting perspective. And in that case, it was something that was important even then. So it's not just about being in Golos and saving ourselves from the carnage and from all the chaos which follows for when there's not proper authority. So that's just a couple of the sources. Again, may come back to them soon, depending on the time. So let's have a look a little bit further. So when did it come? When do we first see this surfacing as an example in halachic literature, in firm halachic literature? So we see in Avud Ram, it's on page 3 of the sheet, the Avud Ram says as follows, in Hilchos Kriyas HaTorah. Now Avud Ram says, V'nagu levorech es ha-melech. The custom was, he says, straight after the finished Kriyas HaTorah, V'nagu levorech es ha-melech, ulispalel l'Hashem, to daven to Hashem, she'azruhu v'yamsuhu al-ovav. Of course, in those days, war was the main thing that a king did, was went to fight. So therefore, he emphasizes that idea. That's also how we see in some of the versions of the Tefillah, we say there's all this reference to Hapoitzes David Abdo Mikhail Avro, which some people still say that version, because the whole emphasis in history, especially medieval history, was a king went to war. That was what his main purpose was for in many ways. So Shikane Kosovo Dorshua Shlomo Sheglesias Chem Shalom, Vispala Bal Hashem, the Avud Ram quotes the whole Pasuk, Ki Bishlomo Yelochem Shalom. Vishalom Ha'ir, says the Avud Ram, She is Palel Hashem, She Inatseach HaMelech Es Oivav. The king should be victorious over his enemies. And he brings that Gemara in Avodah Zarah as well. And he says, V'hainu Disnan Rabbi Hanina Skan HaKoinim Oimev Vispala Bishlomo Shalom Machos. And then he says, "V'achar kach." Very interesting. Mevorach es hakahal k'mo shneema v'yevorach es kol kal Yisrael. So according to the Avud Raham, the sequence was to do the tefillah for the king first, and then to do the tefillah for the community. I read somebody pointed out that Avud Raham does not actually mention it in the context of Shabbos. He mentions it after Kriyas HaTorah. Does that mean that they did it even during the week? Not sure, because here, when he says the bracha for the kahal, could have been said every day, or could have only been for Shabbos. But the order was the other way round. According to the way that Avud Ram did it, it was the other way round. The earliest recorded version is the 11th century. There is a recorded tefillah in the 11th century. So that's the Avud Ram. And there's a Kolboy as well. A Kolboy also says a similar thing, but he refers it specifically to Shabbos. Kolboy says, I'll give you the quotation, the Kolboy says, "Uv Shabbos Shachris, no guloima acha haftara misha beirach." The Yesh Mekomo Shemavorach in Hamelach. So we said a misha beirach. The Yesh Mekomo says the Kolboy Shemavorach in Hamelach. The acha kacha kahal. The hakol lefi haminag. So according to the Kolboy, this actually is something which is definitely only done on Shabbos. That's how he puts it in a very clear way. So we definitely see, we can see records by the 13th century, 12th and 13th century, of definitely that we've got some of the recordings of this, of where this has been written down. So have a look, if you look at the sheet on top of page, bottom of page 2, top of page 3. So Misha Berech, etc., bottom of page 2. Adonenu Hamelech says there, Fernando. That was either Spain, Castile, so it's Spain. I think at that time Castile was an independent, was a separate part. So it's Castile, so Fernando. And then on the next page, Mishaberach Malchei Umos Ha'olam V'Nosa Lehem Kavod V'Him Shilam Hu Yivorech Es HaDenedu HaMelech Don Ploni, because the kings were all called Don this and Don that. They were not Don Mekav's horse. They were called Don this and Don Ferdinand and so forth. Shehu Rachman Al Yisrael. Look at the words, the very interesting words. Melech Malchei HaMelochim Yamtzu, Melech HaMelochim Yivorecheu, Melech HaMelochim Yazru, Melech HaMelochim Yitzhem Liba Rachmanus. This word Rachmanus was introduced because of the vulnerability. By this time, the vulnerability of the Jews, by that time, particularly in Castile, that time, the Jews were getting into the vulnerable phase of their existence in Spain, and it speaks about Rachmanus. And then we have another version in 1456, Misha Berach Avosei Avram, Yitzchov Yak Moshe and Dovrisho Yivarech HaMelech Alfonso, another king of Spain, and then similar to what we had, but not the same. So we're going to see this as a theme. There's a theme that actually is one of those tefillahs which is, it seems that there's no fixed, it wasn't made by the Anshei Knesset Sekhedola, and there isn't a fixed version for it. There are so many different versions for it. The point is that we have to do it in the way that reflects the ideas which we're trying to convey by saying it. So it doesn't actually mean, it may be contextualized according to the country or place where it was being said. It would be fascinating to know if, like Rush is suggesting, that they did this at the time already when we were in our prime, we had the Beis Hamikdash, what the Mishnah Berurah would be. Because that was before the time of fixed filler. So if I don't know whether we could ever know such a thing, but it would be fascinating. It was before the time the Amshei Knesset Sekhedola fixed the tefillah at all. So the language may have been totally different. Don't know. Very, very, very interesting, that suggestion of Rashi. So let's go a little bit further with it. That's how we see it kind of coming onto the map in Halacha, and in where we get quotations of what actually was being said at those particular times. Yeah, okay, so I want to share with you just something completely different on the point, so I don't miss it out, okay, that there's an interesting alternative pshat in the translation of the Mishnah. If you look at the Mishnah, there's a suggestion that it means as follows, that Hevo Mispala Bishloma Shomarchos means the following, not for the welfare of the government, but during the welfare of the government. Bishloma. That means that when things are going well, when you're living in a country, going back to that example, the golden age of Spanish Jewry, that things are going well for the Jews, it's at that point, translation is, pray during the well-being of the government. Because at that point, we should not take the position that we're in at that time, the famous adage, we shouldn't take it for granted where we are and what we are at that particular time. People are often only aroused to daven at times of sorrows, when they are suffering and their needs are not being met by the society in which they live in. When it's tranquil, or relatively tranquil, they don't necessarily see or need the policeman on the streets, as it were. So the Mishnah says, pray, daven, bishloma, at a time when shloma shel malchus, a different explanation. And the Kotzker Rebbe says a similar thing. We say that the government, the authorities, having mispalel bishloma shel malchus means that the authorities should not use their shalom, that the time of peace and prosperity, to turn towards the Jews with anti-Semitism, with ideas, because they've got nothing to do in their times. It's interesting in history, teach history in school, Jewish history, it's interesting to see that there are times very where the problems that the country is facing bring the country to an anti-Semitic state, like Germany. 1930s, 1920s, because of the difficulties, so they turn against the Jews. But sometimes it's the other way around. So there have been occasions in history when it's the prosperity. People have nothing to do, nothing to think about, and they're not necessarily under any kind of pressure. So what they do is they then look to the minorities within them to see, you know, whether these people should be enjoying everything, should they have the benefits that we've got in society. And of course, then in that case, the first people they would turn to would be the Jewish people. So therefore, the Kotzker says that pray during the well-being of the government means don't let it use its moments of tranquility to think about what they can do next to the Jews, as it were.
Does it not mean Bishlomo shel Malchus? It means have shalom with the Malchus. Malchus shalom.
Yes.
In other words, there's a half of that when there's no shalom between the Malchus and the Malchus.
Oh, I'm going to come to that. Okay, so that's that. Yeah, there are various alternative translations. But if you look at Yirmiyah, right, you look at the Pesukim in Yirmiyah, it's much more about that, about the positive side, than it is about what Rabbi Chanina Skanakonim is saying. Another explanation, the Ritva, there's a Ritva I saw quoted in Rabbi Lau's commentary on Pirkei Avos. He quotes a Ritva, it doesn't say where it is. It says the Ritva means that you should have a mispar b'shlomo shel malchus, refers to malchus shamayim. That a person, when we're in Golos, we should be davening, have a mispar b'shlomo shel malchus, that we should have the feeling, we should have the Shekhinah amongst us, even when we're in Golos. That we shouldn't be completely distant and feel disconnected from Hashem, and it should be an active thing amongst our lives and amongst the world around us, so that we are protected. Sh'amalim morah, yeah, that was, if not for the fear of heaven, ish esra'el chayim bala'ai. That's how the Ritva says. I don't know the location of the quote, but it's quoted. I'm sure it's accurate. But that's again a completely different explanation of what the pasuk means. So let's move on just slightly to something else. Another aspect of it is the question of Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKayanim. So there's a couple of Mepharshim explain the following idea. Why was he called Sgan HaKayanim? What was the function of the Kohen Gadol, of the Sgan Kohanim? What was the Sgan Kohen for? Right, mainly for Yom Kippur. If the Kohen Gadol died or was Tomei, then the Sgan Kohen would serve for the, would do the Avodah instead of the Kohen Gadol. Okay? Yeah, sorry? Yeah, would serve for the Kohen Gadol. So, the Sgan would normally be somebody who would be a Sgan to a Kohen. What does it mean, Sgan HaKohanim? He was the deputy to a lot of different Kohanim. That's what it seems, to a lot of different Kohanim Gadolim. That tells us what? That we're speaking about the generation of the leading up to the Churban, around the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash, when we know there were so many different Kohanim Gadolim that served mainly because they paid their way into office, they brought their way into office. And Rabbi Chanina Sgan HaKohanim didn't want to be part of that. He just thought that was the wrong thing to do, to be part of that kind of culture of buying into. So he never became the Kohen Gadol. Sometimes being the assistant doesn't always lead to the top. He never became the Kohen Gadol. But more importantly, he was Sgan HaKohen. There were many different Kohen Gadolim. So he's telling us something about the era in which he lived. That was an era when there was a great deal of violence going on in Eretz Yisrael. It was full of violence. It was full of disorder. Apart from the fact that the Romans, with great cruelty, imposed their authority through cruelty and violence, and through military force, through sheer military force, they imposed authority. But absent that, absent the Roman army, that would have been descended into chaos, because the Jewish leadership was, as we know, it was a time of Sinas Chinam. People were fighting each other. We know from the Gemara what all the terrible things that were going on there just before, and even years before, and then again afterwards, after the Churban. It was also a similar kind of thing. You read any history book which you ever saw, it's all telling you the same thing. So it was a time of great violence, and even though it was the Romans, he still said, we're always better, that was his position, we're always better with some authority than no authority. Because if there's no authority, then people just do what they want. And even if it's not about political violence or fighting the Romans or fighting this, people will take advantage. Now imagine that a few years ago when there was the flood in New Orleans, and people just literally, because there was no police, there was for a few days afterwards, there was no police, they just went mad there with burglary and stealing and looting and everything. It always happens like that because that's the way the world is, and that's what we'll come to in a second. That is the way the world is, and that's why he said, Rabbi Chanina said it, even so, even though we're suffering at the hands of the Romans, it's still better to have that than not to have anything at all. Which leads to the question. What, your question. So what happens? What happens in those periods when we are under the hand of a regime which is a difficult, very difficult, anti-Semitic, difficult towards us? I asked around a few people about what happened in Germany before the war. Nobody seems to remember. The only person I spoke to was a child at the time, who doesn't remember. Maybe they were out for that part of davening. They went out for that part of davening. They were playing outside the shul, although something tells me that in Germany they probably didn't allow that. They were probably very strict about it. But what actually happened? So if anyone, something to ask around, if you know anybody who was reasonably a teenager or knew about that time, did they continue to say it? Did they continue to say a tefillah for the government at the time, say between 1933 and 1939?
I asked my mother, yep. And she said, no, it's sure for the royal family. And I was a little kid, so I didn't ask who is the royal family.
Where's this?
In Germany.
But they didn't have a royal family.
That's what I didn't ask. I was a little kid when I asked her. They didn't say for Hitler, you must.
No. Okay, so that's another question we might not come to today. There's another aspect of this, whether you name the rulers or you don't name the rulers, you just say a general tefillah for the government, for the Malchus, or the Memshala, whichever word you want to use, rather than actually name a specific monarch or a specific ruler. For America, I think, for example, today in America, I think they just say the president and the vice president. It's a good job, actually. Yeah, given what's going on there. But they say the president, they don't change the name accordingly. So maybe in your case, there was something like that. I'll show you later. I've got some printouts and some actual ones. And I've got one that was that's in the Siddur, the Sfas Emes Siddur, which was a Siddur that was used commonly in... What did you call it?
Redelheim.
The Redelheim, yeah. The notation I've got, it's got for the fatherland, the Vaterland, which I assume means the fatherland. Sorry?
I turned off the one who printed this.
Yes.
He changed the wording for Gebet für das Vaterland.
Yeah. To
and he wrote it in Evrit.
What did he write?
It hasn't got the same klang.
Because the fatherland has got a terrible like connotation for us. Yes, it's interesting. See, obviously, this one seems to be, if you look at it later, it's completely different to any that we've used or any of the themes that we've followed. Nisal of Avenu al Kapayim, al Kelba Shomayim, Onav Rachamim, Makar Habrocha, Onav Mashpir, Atom Mashpir, Shoin Galim, and then he says, Yehino Chastacha in Eretz Moiladatenu, Eretz. And then leaves a space, Yorum Hoida. So you're davening, according to this, I said, this is in, what did you call it?
The
Redelheim. Yeah, I just call it Spasem. One of my members went to live in Israel. They gave me a version, a very old version of it, and that's where I found it. So it doesn't mention the government, it mentions only the country. Okay, so it seems that, it's again quoted, Dan Binstock spoke about this a little bit, that it seems that they still did it, but they daven. If you look at the wording, it says simple canon wording that Hashem should put into their hearts, that Levia and Seha, to deal with Chesed with the Jewish people. So that was the kind of thing that they were. They still said it, but they said it in such a way that it was asking that they should have compassion and look towards us, and they should change their minds, basically. Yeah, they should change their minds about what we're doing, but without saying it openly. That seems to be what continued in many countries where there were obvious persecutions. I mean, if you imagine what happened at the time of the Tsar, right, in the late 1800s, Alexander, you know, are those terrible persecutions? I've seen a machzor, I haven't got it now, but I've seen a machzor which has got in the tefillah for the Tsar. So it seems though they did say it, and the idea of the tefillah was that it should be better than it is now. So they didn't not say it. But what exactly happened in Germany at the end of the 1930s, I haven't been able to resolve absolutely clearly. So I'd be very interested to find out. Okay, so that is an issue. Another question arises, it's just a question of minhag, of whether people stand or sit for this. Okay, people who do it in shul, they stand or sit for it. Again, there are different minhagim. Some shuls hold the Sefer Torah. If you look in some of the sources, it says at this point you hold the Sefer Torah. The Chazan holds the Sefer Torah. And in fact, again, you can have a look at it later. I've got a copy of the one for Queen Victoria, okay, which was published in 1860, the version published in 1860. And it says there, the reader takes the Torah and says the following for the royal family. Okay, very interesting. Our Sovereign Lady Queen Victoria, Albert Edward, Prince of Wales, the Princess of Wales and all the royal family. That was from 1860. That was changed. That was actually changed. It's not the version we use now. Yeah. So they took the Sefer Torah. Sorry, say?
Yes. I think the problem is the Queen is the Prince Philip, Charles, Prince of Wales. For the family.
That's what we do, yeah. Yeah, okay. So that we name, that's as I say, it's another aspect of this about naming whether you name or not. The problem with the naming is... obviously, it can change. It changes. So, yeah. Okay, so... Yeah, okay, so just moving on a little bit. Just another couple of points that I'd like to cover, okay, is the... The idea, the very interesting historical reference in Samuel Pepys, and I've copied this in full on page 3. So anybody knows the story, Samuel Pepys was obviously the famous diarist in England, and on the 14th of October 1663, he took a walk in the East End of London, and he came to the Cree Church, it's called Cree Church Lane Shul, which was the ancestor shul of Bevis Marks, of the Sephardi, Spanish and Portuguese. How long had the Jews been in England for at that time? 7 years, okay? Cromwell allowed the Jews back in 1656. In fact, probably won't get to it today, Menashe ben Israel, when he wrote his letter to Cromwell, he actually refers to the fact that the Jews prayed for their monarch, for the king. He actually refers to that in his letter that he sent to Cromwell. But just going to that story, Samuel Pepys took a walk on the 14th of October 1663, and he arrives at Cree Church Lane Shore, and he goes up the stairs. What day is the 14th of October 1663? Yes, thank you, Simchas Torah. So this English gentleman, or how much a gentleman he was, I can't tell you, but this Englishman arrives in that shul, and what does he see on Simchas Torah, what goes on in most shuls? Okay, a lot of, it's not a dignified kind of davening that you expect on a normal day. There's people going around, and even amongst the Sephardim, right, who are very particular about their Kabbalah, it's different on Simchas Torah. I'm not saying it was disorganized, but he wasn't what he expected. So I've just put in there, because it's relevant to this, but it's very interesting to see the story, right, to actually see it in his diary. This is what it says. Their service is all in a singing wen in Hebrew. Their laws they take out of the press, which is like a box, and are carried by several men, 4 or 5 burdens in all, and they do receive one another, they do relieve one another. We take the Sefer Torah, give it to one another, and whether it is that everyone desires to have carrying it, I cannot tell. Thus they carried around it the room while such a service is singing, and in the end they had a prayer, for the king, which they pronounced his name in Portugal. Okay, because they were Spanish and Portuguese Jews. Clear reference by 1663. This established community was doing this there, and of course by this time it was certainly a very, very comparative favourable life in Hebrew. But then he adds on and says, "But Lord, see the disorder, the laughing, the sporting and attention, confusion in all their service, more like brutes than people knowing the true God." That was his impression. He got the wrong, the one day of the year that he picked to go to shul was the wrong day. He couldn't believe that Jews, who were known to be the people of God, would be behaving in such a way in shul. Would make a man forswear ever seeing them again more, and indeed I had never seen so much. So he never, according to his diary, never went back to a shul to see a shul again. But it was interesting, but he hears the tefillah for the royal family, and he knows what it is, and he knows it's in Portuguese, and it's a very interesting historical recording. Sorry?
It was in England. Why was in the prayer?
Because they were Spanish and Portuguese, and large parts of the family. Sorry?
So it was an insult.
No, he didn't take it as an insult, not at all, no, because they came from mainly from Amsterdam, and they were Murano Jews or whatever you want, from Portugal. But it is a very interesting thing. Again, you can have a look at it, if we've got a minute, I'll leave it on here to look at, but my Chavrusa, Rabbi Nadav, he's responsible for updating texts for Spanish and Portuguese for the Sephardi authorities, and he sent me some copy of the one from their version of 1836 of it. They have a version from 1836, and by that time it was already changed to, on one side it had it in English, and on the other side, on the Hebrew side, it has it in what looks like to me, I'm not an expert, it looks like Portuguese. Okay, it could be Spanish, but it's Portuguese. Sorry?
Marino?
No, I think it's Spanish. Looks like Spanish. So the king of that time was King William, Queen Adelaide, and all the royal family. 1836. Okay, just before Queen Victoria came queen. Yeah? So, again, interesting history. So, let's just kind of move on a little bit. I want to just wrap up with a few things. Because, see, there's a lot to this, okay? I want to try and see if we can resolve the question about the difference between the Mishnah and Yirmiyah. And really, the answer is in the context. I've kind of alluded to it. The answer is in the context. Because when Yirmiyah was giving this message, and it was B'Shem Hashem, Koyam HaHashem, that's what it says. Yeah, Koyam HaHashem. Hashem Tzvokai Selekei Yisrael Achol HaGol Asher Glesi Mirushalayim Bavela. So it's the words of Hashem. So, Yirmiyah is saying it B'Shem Hashem. And the going into Golos, it was a sad thing, basically, which had been destroyed. But relatively speaking, right, that was a calm period in Jewish history. Although they were in Golos, relatively speaking, there was some violence at the beginning. We know it leads to the Purim story, and we know by the end of that period, they certainly, it's the whole backcloth to the Megillas Esther, is the whole story how the Jews had become comfortable and settled down, and they went to the Sudas Achashverosh. By that time, it was very well, they were relatively well off and well-to-do in the sense of they weren't being directly persecuted. So Yirmiyahu is giving them that idea. He's speaking to them and saying to them, for you, going into Golos, don't cut yourself off. Don't imagine that all this is happening. It's all the Ratzon of Hashem. And you should know you're going to be here for a number of years, and you should make the best of it. And the context is positive. Where you are, within where you are, the context of, yes, you haven't got a Beis HaMikdash, but within the context of where you are, therefore it's for Dirushu HaShalom HaEir. That's what he's speaking to them, and in a sense it's a reassurance to tell them, Asher Glezi Azcham Shoma, that's where you are. When we come to Rabbi Chanina Metzgan HaKoinim, the era is completely different. He's concerned with violence, with the Romans, with people, breakdown of law and order, the threat. So therefore, he's basing it on what Yirmiyahu says, but he gives us a motivation, idea for what is going to happen for the next 2,000 years. We're in Golos, that we have to be more concerned. The emphasis shifts. The emphasis shifts to the idea of looking and benefiting from the fact that there's law and order more than anything else. And therefore, he says this idea of he stresses the idea of Ishes Re'eu Chaim Barai, because that's what was going on. And it's very interesting to see that actually he was a companion, as contemporary of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as we famously know, was taken out of Yerushalayim, and he made requests to the Roman emperor, and he said, the Roman general, he said, Ten Liyavna V'chachomeh, on the other requests that he made. And why did he make those requests? He knew that he couldn't save the Beis HaMikdash. He made those requests because he wanted to try and ensure a future for the Jewish people where they were. So instead of thinking about getting something impossible and trying to deal with something that wasn't going to change, he thought about how he could make life better for the future where it was in that context. So that's what Rabbi Chanina is doing. He's looking to the future. He knows there's going to be a long period of brutal exile. So he knows that the answer to the question is to daven to Hashem b'shalom shel malchus, because that's the key thing as we go forward. He sees that. He has a vision of what is going to be in the future and what's necessary. We have to connect with Hashem in order to get there to be protected. Just thinking about this time of the year, what happened in the Crusades leading up to Shavuos in Europe in 1096, what I think it was, and what was going on in Europe. And as soon as they reached the Alsace and the area, they just let loose. And even when the Bishop of Mainz tried to save the Jews and they invaded his house, people just did what they wanted. They just did what they wanted. So we can understand the idea of the vision of Rabbi Chanina ben Trajan. And this works so important, works very importantly for us to do it. And just to finish again, just to finish with this idea, if you look at this word, Ishes Re'eu Chaim Bela'oi, if you look at it, one of the places this word comes is in Tehillim, chapter 124. Put it right at the end of the sheet on page 3. Lule Hashem Shaholanu Kumalein Adam, Azai Chaim Belanu. They would have swallowed us alive. That's the word that Rabbi Chanina Skanakonim is using. The word of being bala, of swallowing up. But what's the context? Lule Hashem Shahay Alanu, Bekum Aleinu Adam. He's locking into that idea that disorder, and people get swallowed alive when there's disorders. Therefore, he's thinking about the idea of the authorities to protect us from that point of Shahay Alanu, Bekum Aleinu Azayacham. It's Hashem in the end of the day, but those are the Shalichim of Hashem. So we've got. That's where we are. And that ties in with this Pirkovitz, because the Abarabanel, finish off with this, the Abarabanel says a beautiful long piece of Abarabanel on this Mishnah. The Abarabanel says, and look what his life was, look what he had to experience at the hands of the Spanish government. He was right at the top there, famously. He nearly managed to crack it and to save the Jews, and then the Queen intervened, and the Isabella and the Confessor, and they stopped the King agreeing to the release of the Jews. So the Abarabanel says that you need it, because the Mishnah before is a Kaviyah ben Mahalel. The Kaviyah ben Mahalel says a person should remember three things, the Enatah Bola de Aveira. So he says, that's all very good, says the Abarabanel. That's the thought process. that, but that's on your, depends on your mind. It said, but to not to do wrong, you need more than just the idea. You need the authority. You need to know that there's an authority there that's actually going to enforce it. So in a general context, the violence and things which hurt other people, all those things which hurt other people, can only be controlled. It's not enough to say to people, just think about our chairman, you won't do wrong. You need more than that. You need enforcement. That's how Barabanel connects it. So it's all right saying there's a yellow line, don't park on the yellow line. Very nice. The traffic warden is not there, then you'll be tempted, or many people will be tempted, because they know there's no enforcement. You've got to have the enforcement. That's what Barabanel learns. And that's what Rabbi Elazar Kaplan says in this week's parak, because passions are so strong, human behaviour can only be regulated by authority. And that's, in the end, what this mission is teaching us. And that's what the background to this is. You want to have a look at this? We've got here from 1836, and some of the contemporary ones, the Sephardi ones. I'll leave them here. You can have a look at them.
Very interesting.